As promised in the last segment, we're going to take a look at the Middle East, a Middle East news update with David Dolan, longtime journalist, over 30 years as a journalist, and most of that time in the Middle East somewhere over in Lebanon or in Israel or some other place where he's reported about the events unfolding there and does have great insight as to all of these things happening. David, let me just begin with this, what I think is pretty controversial. A radical Islamic cleric has stood up on the Temple Mount on a Friday message. They go up there and preach on the Temple Mount. They call it Al-Aqsa. They don't call it the Temple Mount. But it's the same location, and they do a sermon. They call him an Islamic preacher. And he stood up there this last week, and he made this statement that the United States and the European Union need to be destroyed. He made this statement from Al-Aqsa. He said, "We also want to establish a caliphate." That's Arabic for a worldwide dominion or kingdom, and they want to do it in Jerusalem. This is pretty provocative, is it not?
It is definitely provocative, Jimmy, but it's something we have been hearing not necessarily from the site of the ancient Jewish temple itself, but certainly from many mosques around the region, Cairo and Damascus and Amman, and we have had such calls made before. I don't know that it ever included a call for the destruction of the United States, though. That sounds pretty new to me in terms of a speech from that site. It's considered, of course, officially one of 13 holy sites that come in at number three, if you will, in the Islamic official list of holy sites. Mecca, of course, being number one in Arabia, Medina, where Muhammad was buried at number two, and then Jerusalem and Baghdad and various other sites rank three. But emotionally, as I pointed out in my first book many years ago, emotionally, the Temple Mount is probably the most important Islamic site because they believe that their triumph, what the Quran says, the triumph of Islam over the infidels, over Judaism and Christianity and other faiths, the fact that Muhammad is the final prophet as they see it, et cetera, as written out in the Quran, and that was all proved to be the case by their conquest of Jerusalem soon after Muhammad's death and kicking out the Christian Byzantine Empire at the time. So that site's very important, and whenever a speech is made there, or a talk is given there, it receives extra attention in the Islamic world. So this is just another step towards that worldwide move to bring in a caliphate and to unite all of the Arab Muslim countries under one banner, and they want the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and others to be part of that. So it's provocative, and it's something Israel has to keep a close eye on, and so does the rest of the world.
Well, is it really a viable possibility that this could happen along all the lines of the Islamic faith? I know there's some people have said it about a 10% of the Islamic world of 1.5 billion people. That'd be 150 million people, I guess it would be. Anyway, that are really the radicals. Is this prevalent among all the Muslims in this world today?
Well, Jimmy, I think if you asked even the average Muslim, what does the Quran say about Islam, and what does it say about Christianity and Judaism, etc., they would all answer in a way that we might consider a little radical, because the Quran does say those things. It does say that jihad should be waged until Islam rules the world entirely, and it makes clear that that jihad is not just a spiritual one, as some Muslims will maintain, but it makes clear that will also involve violence and killings and that sort of thing. So considered very legitimate means of spreading the faith in fundamentalist Islam. But having said that, the average person in Cairo today, in fact, yesterday there were big demonstrations there, both for and against the former Morsi government, hundreds of thousands of Muslim fundamentalists taking to the streets, and they would certainly agree with that totally. But the average Egyptian just wants to live their life, and they don't want to get caught up in some pan-Arab government, and they certainly don't want some of the restrictions that the fundamentalists want to see in place in terms of separation of women and men and other things along those lines. So, it's not everybody, but it's enough Muslims, hundreds of millions probably, that would support such a thing, and that gives a good base for groups like Al-Qaeda and the Brotherhood and others to operate on.
When we think about what's going on in Egypt, let's refocus on that just for a moment. Seems like the new Egyptian government has two fronts, the situation with the supporters of Mohamed Morsi, the president, actually, that was taken out of his post, but also in the Sinai, the terroristic activities increasing there, the Egyptian military being sent down there, and interestingly, Israel is allowing for that to happen. The Camp David Accords restricted any military operation from the Egyptian side in the Sinai, but the Israelis now giving approval for that. Those are two tough fronts that the new government in Egypt is going to have to deal with.
Well, definitely. We haven't seen anything approaching civil war yet, though, and that is the main concern that the Israelis and I think the Obama administration and others have. So far, it hasn't turned into a large-scale violent clash, but that's always a potential, and that could be in Cairo and Alexandria and the other cities. But as you say, already, and it's been going on really since Mubarak was overthrown over 2 years ago, the Sinai has just become a hellhole, really, of terroristic activity with various groups operating there and money flowing around, and you know, it's kind of a lawless zone. So, yeah, the Israelis would prefer to see the U.S.-trained and funded Egyptian army in there than al-Qaeda shooting rockets or Hezbollah smuggling in weapons, Iran smuggling in weapons to Gaza, et cetera. So they've agreed to this increase, but, of course, if there were a civil war in Egypt and the military eventually lost it, then the Israelis might go back in themselves if they had to. But that's a last resort, and it's not anything that would be permissible under the treaty. But that's if maybe the treaty collapsed, and that's only likely if the Muslim Brotherhood does get back into power somehow. And that, of course, is very possible. They did win the first national vote, after all, and they do have a lot of supporters in the country.
John Kerry, Secretary of State, has been in the Middle East for his sixth trip to the Middle East. He was mainly in Amman, Jordan, meeting with Mahmoud Abbas, President of the Palestinian Authority, endeavoring to try to get the peace talks back on track. Howbeit, there has been rumors that have surfaced that Prime Minister Netanyahu may agree to what the Palestinians are calling for. Their borders have to be the pre-67 borders. Israel must agree to that before they go to the negotiating table with the Israelis. And at the same time, some of the leadership, and in fact, of cabinet members in the Israeli government, saying they'll pull the coalition apart if indeed anybody agrees to the pre-67 borders. What's that all about?
Well, I think we have to take Prime Minister Netanyahu at his often repeated word, and that is that he will never agree to the redivision of Jerusalem, for instance, and never agree to abandon the neighborhoods around Jerusalem that are mostly Jewish, some in the eastern side of the city, some of the one you used to live in, Jimmy, Gilo, in the south. In the north, there's various remote and various other neighborhoods. We're talking about just around Jerusalem, maybe 250,000 Jewish residents that would be uprooted if the 67 borders were completely adhered to. So I don't see Netanyahu can agree to that. But at any rate, Abbas said Thursday night that that Kerry has not brought enough with him to restart the talks, and that he and his government are not ready to sit down and talk. So I think this is a kind of a dead issue. I doubt if it will lead to the unraveling of Netanyahu's government, because, again, I just think those rumors are belying what he's always said, and that is he's not going to start negotiations with preconditions, and certainly not preconditions that the 67 border will reemerge. Because, again, it wasn't a border. It was just a ceasefire line from the 48 conflict, and it was an untenable line right through the center of a city. And there's only one other city in the world still divided, and that is on the island of Cyprus. And the Israelis don't want to see Jerusalem go backwards in history, as it were, to become like another Berlin or something.
You know, I think that you brought out the best information to help us look at this whole situation last week. Why in the world, when you have the Egyptian situation, a crisis there at the southern border of Israel, and then the civil war at the northern border of Israel, why would you worry about trying to have negotiations which seemingly are at a standstill even at this point? With the Palestinians, and then open up a front there in your belly of the country. It just does not seem logical. David, thank you so very much, my good friend. Talk again next week.
We'll do it, Jimmy. Thank you. God bless.